Thank you, Holy Spirit, that you flood our respective homes with your presence. Isn't it wonderful? Now, some of you have been to Israel. Unfortunately, I'm not amongst them. But some of you will know that the Sea of Galilee is about 13 miles long at its greatest point and about 8 miles wide. It also lies significantly below sea level. And apparently, some of you might have seen them, the high mountains in the northeast slope down towards the sea. And occasionally, you've been there, Graham. And I don't know how often it happens, but sometimes there is a very cool wind that blows down from the Golan Heights and hits the warm air, which of course is prevalent over the sea. And this sudden change can cause furious storms quite quickly. And apparently it's been recorded that some waves have been measured, I don't know quite how they do that, but up to 10 feet. So something can happen quite suddenly. And this takes us to the very familiar story that you know, but it's what God has been speaking to me about. And it's Mark chapter 4, verse 35. On the same day when evening had come, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let us cross over to the other side," obviously the Sea of Galilee. Now when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as he was, and other little boats also were with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that it was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. And they awoke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" Then he arose and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. But he said to them, "Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?" And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, "Who can this be, that even the wind and the sea obey him?" Now, I just absolutely love this story because it reveals human nature. We've just heard Carol's sister's response in a situation where we get worked up and frustrated. And I just picture these disciples. How can Jesus be asleep when, yeah, the boat is filling? And what would we be doing, bailing out and petrified about what is, seems to be obvious? And I find the response also quite interesting because some of the disciples who were in that boat were fishermen themselves. So they were aware of what could happen in the Sea of Galilee. Others apparently believed that there were monsters in the sea. So depending on who you were, you either saw your victim, self as a victim of the monsters or the wind or the whatever. And I just thought about their human response. How would we respond? We're in the boat. There are these enormous waves. The boat is filling up. And the man who can do something about it is just casually lying there fast asleep. We can see fear, we can see anxiety, there's agitation, perhaps even anger. Why doesn't he do something? Or even an irritation with Jesus. And look at his response. He rebukes the wind, he calms the sea. And then he says, "Why are you frightened? Why haven't you got faith?" Now, it's interesting that this version, it appears in all the Synoptic Gospels, but in Matthew 8, this comes after many wonderful healings which Jesus did. So chronologically, if that is accurate, you think, surely, you've seen Jesus heal the leper, you've seen him heal Peter's mother-in-law. Surely, you know that Jesus has supernatural power. So why didn't you respond in that way? Crises in life are often compared to storms. They come upon us, terrify us, knock us about, threaten to destroy our stability and our security. But as Christians, we have that assurance, Jesus is in the boat. But it's to remember that he's in the boat. We seem to get whipped away, just like Carol and many of us, in a situation when confronted with a crisis. There's the human response. How am I going to cope? What am I going to do? Oh, what about this? What about that? Rather than remembering Jesus is in the boat. Now, there are two kinds of peace, I think, that have been referred to in this familiar story. The one is the circumstantial peace. In other words, the waves and the wind and all the rest of it. And then there's the inner peace that I think Jesus was addressing. And that's what we're going to concentrate on. And as the Lord was talking to me, I thought, here we go, back to Galatians 5. If you recollect, the last time I spoke, it was love and joy. And now there's peace. And I thought, what is this? Is this an examining of the fruit of the Spirit? What did Jesus have to say about this peace? In John 14, verse 25, he says to his disciples, now bearing in mind that he's kind of giving them a heads up on what's going to happen. These things I have spoken to you while being present with you, but the Helper, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, he will teach you all things. Key word, peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives, do I give to you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. Now that was the essence of Tamsin's story. I think it is something that we confront every single day of our lives. And as I was contemplating this, I thought Jesus was actually more than qualified to be able to say this to them, because if you remember the prophecy about Jesus in Isaiah chapter 9, where one of the attributes that is given to him, he is the Prince of Peace. So right before he ever came to us, he had that attribute and that quality. And then Isaiah goes on further in chapter 53, where it talks about the crucifixion of Jesus and all that was accomplished through that. I just want to read the bit that is relevant. He was pierced for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities. The chastisement for our peace was upon him. In a different translation, it actually says, he bore pain and punishment for our well-being. That word, peace. What is the peace? And how is it reflected in our lives? And do we respond differently from the way the disciples did? Or are we just as human as they are? What is that peace? How do we see it? If we say somebody is peaceful, what are they reflecting? If you just think of some of the words that are synonyms for it, tranquility, quietness, reassurance, calm. And then you think about, if you have that peace, how do you feel? There is a deep, undisturbed kind of joy, something that is settled in your heart and mind. And further on in John 16, after Jesus was teaching the disciples in that previous one that the Holy Spirit would come, he gives them a hint and he says, I have told you these things so that you may have peace. So he's kind of trying to make a point here. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. So he knew the world as we know the world, and I think we all have periods of greater trouble or lesser trouble, but we all have to confront life. Towards the end of John's gospel, after Jesus had been raised from the dead, Again, I found it quite significant. Twice he says, "Peace be to you." And how do we apply it now? We talk about, for instance, I heard this morning, in Bolton, there are new restrictions for the people because it's the highest rate of the coronavirus now in the UK. We hear about spikes and second waves. We hear about virus being created in Chinese laboratories. We hear about all the calamities that are going on, demonstrations everywhere, what's going on in Russia and places like that, and various vaccines. All of this can become very confusing. All of it can become very disturbing. But in spite of all of that, I really believe that we are called to accept, to embrace, and reflect the peace of Jesus. Now, this Hebrew word, shalom, is the most incredible word. There are all sorts of meanings to it. It's not just peace, harmony, wholeness, completeness, prosperity. It's a sense of may well-being be upon you if you say to somebody, shalom. It incorporates physical, psychological, social, and spiritual aspects of life. In other words, the whole of life. Everything about us needs to be pervaded by that shalom. It flows from all of one's relationships being put right with God, within oneself and with others. So it's peace right in the core of your being. According to one author, the word means far more than just peace of mind. In the Bible, it means universal flourishing, wholeness and delight, something that inspires joyful wonder. It's not just a casual greeting. It is a prayer, a blessing, a deep desire, and a benediction. And then the Lord took me to Isaiah 26. And this, as you know, is what sustained me through the beginning of lockdown. You will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you, because he trusts. We've been talking a lot about that. Rosemary mentioned it earlier. Trust in the Lord forever. For in Yah, the Lord, is everlasting strength. Trust and peace go hand in hand. Now, it's interesting that the Hebrew translation of that perfect peace is known as shalom, shalom. So do we have the shalom, shalom of God? F.B. Meyer's comment on this verse I absolutely love. He says, understand, dear soul, that it is your privilege to live inside the double doors of God. So we've got the shalom and the shalom. He says to us, peace, peace. If one assurance isn't enough, he will follow it with a second and a third. So we go on, shalom, shalom, shalom. Because that's where he is in relation to caring for us. We've spoken about it, we've sung about it this morning. I think we all long to have that peace in every situation, especially when we're in a boat in a storm on the sea, when we're in turmoil. Some of us only have it fleetingly, but for me, you know, I think of that verse, for me and my household, that's how I feel, that this is what I am gunning for. I'm trying to respond. Tamsin said earlier, it doesn't come naturally. You have to exercise a discipline. So where you are training yourself to remember that God is in the boat, that he is there, that he is with us in every situation, that we don't just overreact humanly. As Isaiah says, this involves trusting God with all our being. In Matthew, we are told to love God with all of our minds. Now, this trust and mind, of course, governs so much of what how we respond. And Paul says we can have the mind of Christ. What does that really mean? In Romans 12, he urges us to renew our minds. So we are back to this, an attitude of heart and mind. It's not just a feeling, an emotion, but it is the application of the head knowledge. And as we achieve this alignment with the Holy Spirit, we will be able to experience the shalom, shalom. Expressed in another way, Paul encourages us in Philippians 4, and again, one of the sustaining verses I had. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which passes understanding, will guard your hearts and minds. So they're all interrelated, peace, heart, mind. And as I pondered about this, it's a verse we say so quickly and so easily, and the peace of God that passes understanding. What does passes understanding actually mean? It means you can have something that is incredible. So you can have peace even in this incredible situation. Whereas normally people would be worked up, agitated. But God gives it beyond. It is unbelievable. It's incredible. It's despite the situation. You might remember a hymn that we used to sing many years ago. When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrow like sea billows roll, whatever my lot thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul. Now, some of you might know the context in which that was written. In 1871 in America, in the city of Chicago, was a man by the name of Horatio Spafford. He was a wealthy lawyer and he owned a lot of property. And in that year, there was what was known as the Great Fire of Chicago, and most of his property was destroyed. So he was financially ruined by that event. He was Christian, and in fact, he was a great friend of D.L. Moody. Anyway, they managed to put that aside, and 2 years later, in 1873, they decided to come over to England for a holiday. And because he was tied up with business, he didn't come, but he sent his wife and four daughters ahead of him. And en route, the ship in which they were traveling had an accident and crashed into another boat. And his wife and four children, of course, were tossed into the sea, and the four daughters died. Now, that's like some kind of tumult. He then, having got the telegram, got into the next available boat and traveled over. And while he was in the middle of the Atlantic, he then began to write, "It is well with my soul." Now, I found that quite a challenge. Having lost all four children, his wife was ill, and yet he was able to put that aside and write this very memorable hymn. A similar story, in some ways, also took place over 100 years after that. There was a pastor of a church in Ohio in the US, and they were busy preparing for a day of celebration at the church. And his daughter writes the following. "Mid-morning of April the 3rd, the sky grew menacing and dark. A storm erupted, and a mile-wide path of destruction was carved by one of the largest tornadoes ever recorded. Countless homes and businesses were leveled. Thousands were injured, and several people died. The pastor, Steve Adams, was buried beneath the rubble, trapped in a pitch black cavern of panic and isolation. He called out to God. He recounts that miraculously, God met him in a supernatural way and brought him the most unthinkable and powerful peace he had ever known. His darkest moment was filled with the brightest of hope. God showed him how to find a way out by pulling pieces of concrete towards himself rather than attempting to push them away. He eventually managed to create a hole large enough for him to squeeze through. A friend took him for a walk a few days later, and they were looking around the scene. And he said to him, "Steve, God doesn't promise to take us out of the storms of life, but he does promise he will be there right in the midst of it." And sometime after that, Steve Adams then wrote the following song. "When the world that I've been living in collapses at my feet, when my life is tattered and torn, though I'm windswept and battered, I can cling to the cross and find peace in the midst of the storm. There's a peace in the midst of my storm-tossed life. There's an anchor, there's a rock to cast my faith upon. Jesus rides in my vessel, so I'll fear no alarm. He gives me peace in the midst of my storm." And it's interesting because I was almost tempted to call Tamsin and say, "Could you please play Faithful One?" Because in that, of course, Jesus is the anchor. And my challenge to you is, does Jesus ride in your vessel? Now, Graham is going to screen share with us a song from Bethel.
Graham, there's no sound. Wait.
Okay, can you hear that?
Yeah.
Okay.
When my mind is like a battlefield, and my heart is overcome by fear, and hope seems like a ship that's lost at sea, my enemies on every side, I'm tempted to run and hide. Your gentle whisper reaches out to me. To my and breathe.
Thank you. In conclusion, I would like to echo Paul's words in 2 Thessalonians 3. Now may the Lord of peace himself give you peace at all times, in every way. The Lord be with you all. And so, dear friends, I bless you with shalom, shalom. Mm-hmm. Thank you.